So settle down, let's start. The team is here because the chairperson of the OHSC was held up in a lift. We will start with Ombud. But they are back-to-back presentations. And then we will pause and continue the other presentation. We have met these leaders recently, so we know them. They'll just go on a presentation now. But it looks like Office of the Health and Compliance has got a big delegation. We may not know all of them. Professor Makgoba and the small office but powerful Ombud, you are here. Please start your presentation, but we will take the other presentation back to back with this one. I hope you do just as well.
Okay.
We have just listened to another presentation of a twin sister, a twin brother to you. They are twins to you in as far as the audit AGS said. You all have got clean audits, so you are twins. Whether you are twins in every respect with the MRC, we don't know. We probably will be hearing from you. But thank you very much for making time to come to Cape Town and meet with us. Let us therefore start with the Ombud, Head of Ombud report led by Professor Makgoba, and then immediately thereafter we'll also take the Office of the Health Standards of Compliance presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. It's often a privilege, I think, to come and present, I think, to an oversight body such as yourself. I suppose it's like when you are looking for answers, and sometimes you have to pray to God, and sometimes you have to go to traditional healers, sometimes you go to bishops, and I think the Portfolio Committee does serve that kind of purpose, where, you know, we can cry a little bit, but that's fine. I'm here with Monata Utlole, who will do the presentation, and I will summarize the main points of our activity over the past 12 months, and then we take it from there, and then, as they say, it will be followed immediately, straight away, by the OHSC, and then, I suppose, then the combined sort of like interrogation or question will come afterwards. And that is all.
Thank you, Prof. Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee on Health, it's a great pleasure today to present to you the annual performance report for the Office of the Health Ombud 2018-19 financial year. And in terms of the outline of the presentation, we would introduce the presentation, look at the overview of the Office of the Health Ombud, look at the performance report, strategic challenges, deal with progress on identified priorities, and then we'll make conclusions and way forward. Now, this report is the third report of the Office of the Health Ombud, but it is the second report that is presenting before the Portfolio Committee. And therefore, it will give a reflection of the activities and the work performed by the Office of Health Ombud in the 2018-19 financial year. The report, as it stands, should be read in conjunction with the annual performance report of the Office of Health Standard Compliance, because we find this very important, because you will note that the Office of the Ombud is located within the OHSC. Program 3 also details the indicators that are related to complaints management, and these will then be reported by the OHSC. The Office of the Health Ombud continued to fulfill its legal mandate despite the limitation that stand in the current legislation, as was presented before the Portfolio Committee on Health in the previous visit that the Health Ombud was here. But as an overview, I think it is very important for all of us to note that for an office of state to enjoy parliamentary oversight, it must be able to fulfill a minimum of a certain criteria, and that would be that it must be established independently through a proper legal framework, and that it must have an approved structure through the line department, which would be the National Department of Health, of course supported by the Department of Public Service and Administration. But it should also have its own strategy with its key performance areas. And as it stands currently, these are then in the program of the OHSC, which is Program 3. It must have its own independent budget that is independently appropriated by Parliament. Now, if we look at the current situation, the Office of Health Ombud lacks the critical resources that it needs. In most instances, when Prof speaks to his office, he will always indicate that there are two in his office. And he's saying this because within the overall program of the OHSC, the Health Ombud reports directly to the minister, while the CEO of the Office of Health Standard Compliance reports to the board. And therefore, the Office of the Health Ombud is reliant on the staff of the OHSC to execute its role, because Section 81(3)(c) provides that as persons must be designated by the office to the Ombud, he then needs to concur so that they can assist him with the investigations of complaints. But when we look at the staffing level of this complaints management program, we have noted that it has been severely inadequate, because it's running at a vacancy rate of 56.4%. If you look at this from the context of all the posts that are in the approved organizational structure, however, the limitation is that it's issues of funding, because out of the 39 posts that are there, only 19 of them have been funded. The Office of the Health Ombuds organizational structure has been approved by the DPSA and urgently needs funding for it to then be able to operate efficiently. What we've also tried to do is to just create a comparison of the organizational structure of the Office of the Ombud as approved by the DPSA against the current situation in the OHSC. And if we look at this, the proposed structure for the Office of the Ombud will have 113 posts against the 39 that are currently in the organizational structure of the OHSC. But unfortunately, as I've indicated, these current 39 posts that are there, it's not all of them that are funded, and that creates a burden. And apologies for the spelling of organizational. Now, the Presidential Health Summit Compact has endorsed a number of commitments to say that they would ensure that the Office of the Health Ombud is funded, and to also ensure that what would then happen based on this commitment from the Presidential Health Summit is that the Office of the Health Ombud will then initiate processes to go into discussions with the National Treasury as well as the National Department of Health and the OHSC to ensure that there is realization of resources and that the Ombud would then have his statutory independence. But we also have to say the promulgation of the norms and standards that are applicable to different categories of health establishments then strengthens the role of the Health Ombud, in that he would then be in a position to investigate complaints that are related to these breaches, and therefore claims that were initially earlier made by the private health sector to indicate that the Ombud is acting ultra vires will then be cleared. But over and above this, because the current promulgated norms and standards, they are developmentally in nature, they will not necessarily cover every area of complaint that arises from the national health system. And therefore, Section 81, capital letter A, subsection 1, provides for the Ombud to also, out of his own initiative, to institute an investigation against a health establishment or a person in charge. So therefore, that area, then the gap is closed. Now, looking at the performance of the Office of the Health Ombud, one of the reports that was released in the 2018-19 financial year was the investigation report into the allegations of patient mismanagement and patient rights violation at the Tower Psychiatric Hospital and Rehabilitation Center in the Eastern Cape. And there were three recommendations at three levels. Recommendations were made at three levels for the National Department of Health, the Provincial Department, as well as at the institutional level. And one of the recommendations at the national level was to appoint an administrator who would be responsible to look at mental health services within the province, with an aim of ensuring that they would then be able to create a fully functional system where mental health services will be rendered from a quality perspective with developed policies that would be able to assist this kind of a service to function properly, because as it stands, your mental health care users in most instances, when you look across the budget that is provided or allocated for such a service, it's always not adequate to render these kind of services. But also, looking at the Department of Health provincially itself, it would be to develop a policy on mental health, but more importantly also to develop a mental health information management system that would be integrated into the district health system. And at the institutional level, one of the key recommendations that was given is that the current seclusion rooms that were there, because they were found not to be in line with the guidance on seclusion rooms, and therefore it had to ensure that those would then be revamped to ensure that they maintain the safe quality that they need to be able to provide this. And we have continued to also look at the implementation of the life SED-MANI recommendations. But also we want the committee to note that the work of the Health Ombud has been recognized in various sectors. In 2018, the Health Ombud received the Titanic Award for Service Excellence in creating access to healthcare at the 19th Board of Health Funders Conference. And this was because of the landmark Life SED-MANI report and its ripple effect that it had on the national health system. And I should also point out that part of this recognition in the Africa Health Conference 2018, in the public health workshop that was held there, two of the presentations in that workshop were around lessons learned from the Life SED-MANI from different perspectives that indicated the importance of us as a country looking at mental health differently. In addition to this, the Ombud can report that he is now a formal member of the International Ombudsman Institute. Stakeholder relations also remained one of the major priorities for the Office of Health Ombud and the various stakeholders that the Ombud has engaged with. But we also now want to draw on the program complaints management within the Office of Health Standard Compliance, but we are not reporting this the same as how the data would have been reported in the OHSC, as you will see when they present. We tried to look at the 3 years that the Ombud has been in office to look at the trends of complaints. And if you look at the trends, you would realize that within this particular program, we have seen an increase in the number of complaints and request types that come in, because we do not only focus on the complaints that come in. There are certain inquiries that people will bring before the Office of Health Standard Compliance in the call center to raise certain issues. There are also alerts that are related to, as you may look at this as part of your early warning system, and also the complaints that are received. But in general, for the financial year 2018-19, excluding only complaints, apologies for the typo there, it's actually 1,904 complaints that has been received, and of those, 1,697 were accepted for further processes, while 207 were rejected due to lack of mandate. And the call center has, and the assessment unit has resolved 1,125 of the 1,477 complaints. We also felt this slide would be very important to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee that shows the operations in the call center in terms of the incoming and outgoing calls. Now, when you look at the slide, the blue is indicating the incoming calls and the red would be speaking to the outgoing. You would realize that the incoming call are less than what is outgoing, and this it's indicating that within the call center we actually make more contact with the complainants in the form of providing them with feedback. And this is something that is very important, because it shows that for each call that we receive, on average, contact is made with that complainant 3.5 times, which is almost 4. Now, the investigation unit in the year under review received 56 investigations that were referred to them for further on-site processing. And we are noting that Gauteng is the leading province with the cases of investigation that have been referred. And this would stand to reason, because Gauteng is in close proximity to the Office of Health Standard Compliance, and we are seeing that most of these complaints that we receive from Gauteng are mostly via your electronic means, your email or fax to email. So it also shows the literacy levels of people within that province, and hence you are seeing this number of complaints. And Northwest has reported the least cases that were investigated. Of the 56 cases, 10 of those were then exposed to an on-site investigation. Roughly, this would be 17% of those 56 cases. And the investigators participated actively to assist with the investigation of the Health Ombud report. So we need to also understand that it is crucial to resolve complaints within the stipulated time frames, because the procedural regulations requires that within 6 months an investigation should have been completed. But because of the issue of balance between quality and the time that is spent on investigating a complaint, you may find that the 6 months does not become a feasible time to resolve that particular complaint. And especially if you are sitting within an environment where you've got inadequate staffing levels, because currently there are only 4 investigators that are supposed to deal with this bulk of investigations that come before them. Going to the strategic challenges, I would not overemphasize the gaps in the legislation, as already Prof has presented this before the portfolio committee, to say the current arrangements within the Act itself do not, they create challenges, and therefore this requires an urgent intervention, because if the Ombud has got to remain independent, he has to be an independent office that would be able to fulfill this responsibility. The designation and secondment of staff has not occurred as required in terms of Section 81, 3C. And that is why, in most instances, the Ombud will put forward a case to say they are 2 in his office, him and his PA. We also have noted that within the complaints management program, one of the strategic challenges is that this program is now entering its 5th year of operation, but it is the only program within the OHSC that does not have an executive manager. And this creates challenges around strategic leadership and guidance and support, which remain a fundamental gap. And this also impacts negatively on the attainment of the strategic imperatives of the program. The limited human capital, I've already indicated that the approved organogram has not been fully funded. And we also have a short-term strategy that has been put in place from the surplus funds from the previous year of 2017-18. They were used to appoint staff, and we appointed 6 contract staff in the last quarter of the financial year. Now, the progress that the Office of the Health Ombud has made, as already indicated, is now a member of the International Ombudsman Institute, based on the visit that he had with the UK Parliamentary and the Health Service Ombud. And from there, besides the enrollment into that important organization, there are key lessons that would then include the fact that the Parliamentary and the Health Services Ombud is accountable to Parliament, while he is accountable to the Minister. And this really ensures that there is that independence of the Ombud. And he has got 2 offices situated, one in London and the other in Manchester. And if you look at the staff complement, there is 450, which does not even make the fraction of the current staff that the Ombud has, which is himself and the executive assistants. The staff within the Parliamentary Health, Parliamentary and Health Services Ombud, they have written delegation across from the call takers to the operations managers. All of them have got delegated powers. They know exactly what they need to do, and this then assists to ensure that there's high levels of accountability for those staff that are appointed there. They also have got a good capacity building and mental support for the team, which remains a very pivotal priority for that office. But we've also noted that they've got stringent processes in terms of accepting complaints. If a complaint has not been raised at the National Health Service, they will then signpost it accordingly to the relevant facility to manage it. They've also taken a decision, because like the Office of the Health Ombudsman, they had a one section called assessment, the other one investigation. And if you look at the two, they more or less do the same. The other one is just that the assessment does a desktop exercise, but the investigators would then carry out a full investigation. But from maximizing capacity, what they then decided to do is to join these two units together so that they are able to mitigate delays that they've noted on the resolution of complaints. The legal unit within that office is actively involved in every stage of the complaints management program to ensure that there are no legal areas or gaps that are identified. And this becomes very important that once legal has been involved from the onset, it limits any challenges. And one of the key important things that we noted, which is part of the culture, is that they use an open plan office design. In conclusion, for the year 2019-2020, the Ombud intends that there should be a facilitation of legislative reform for the Office of the Health Ombud so that it would be an autonomous entity, and further to lobby for funding for his office structure, expediting the concurrence of the designation and secondment of staff, and to also engage with the National Health Council to lobby support on responses of complaint requests, particularly from the public health sector, and to also lastly facilitate the combination of the assessment and investigation unit to maximize capacity and performance, and to also ensure that complaints that are received within the Office of the Ombud, they will be managed with the expediency that it's supposed to be managed. And I thank you.
Thank you. I just want to summarize what you have heard here as briefly as I can. The United Kingdom has a population of 67 million people versus 57 million people in South Africa. The Office of the Ombud in the UK has 450 staff members, and we have two. So we're serving roughly the same population with totally different capacities. Totally different. And I think this is a question, as an oversight, you must ask yourself, how can we correct it? It's clearly not possible, and it just makes life impossible. We are now at the beginning of the NHI, something that everybody accepts that must be implemented, and it's a new era, it's a new force, an effector of transformation of our health system. Obviously, the Office of Health Standard and the Office of the Ombud are going to play an important role. And one of the pillars of the NHI is quality. And in order, you can't embed quality that is not properly capacitated. And these two offices, obviously, we don't want to drive Rolls Royce, but neither can we be driving VWs. You have to find something that allows the car to move somewhere. And one of the things about quality and quantity is that in order to maximize change in the system, we have got to look for quality instead of quantity. I know here in Parliament, because you've got an Auditor General who thinks that everybody is a banker, you know, everything gets counted in numbers. What we do in our office is to impact on the system. And you impact on that system not in terms of numbers. You impact in terms of depth and quality. And I think as we are shaping the two offices, we must bear in mind this issue of quality versus quantity as to how we can measure. It's so fundamental that if we focus on the quantities, we are not going to get anywhere, particularly when we are constrained in capacity. Because I will come here and I've received 2,000 complaints and I'll have only done one. And you say, okay, this Makhoba guy is lazy, maybe just playing around. And you don't realize that that one investigation has enormous ramifications for the whole system. Take life as a demand, for example. I don't know how many examples it is setting, but it's that kind of thing. The tower investigation in the Eastern Cape. You go there, you suddenly discover that there's no mental health directorate in the Eastern Cape. Suddenly, when you ask Limpopo, they don't have. When you ask Mpumalanga, they don't have. Then you realize how, you know, pervasive the deficiencies are just by learning from one case. And there are others, Northern Cape, despite the fact that they've got a Rolls-Royce hospital, they don't have actually a system of dealing with mental health. The other important thing that one has learned from this, it's something that you can also apply your mind and give us advice. The Office of the Health Ombud, it's supposed to receive complaints, investigate them in a sort of like a, almost like a mediated process in an economical manner. That's what it says in the Act. Once you bring lawyers, you can never be economical. Lawyers are not economic. You can never do anything expeditiously with lawyers because either they don't come to court or they don't turn up, they delay things. So now what happens is this. The legal fraternity has realized that there is information that they cannot get from hospitals or from establishments for confidentiality reasons, even if they went to fire. But the health ombud can access that information because of the way in which the National Health Act is written. So I can get information from the hospital, and then the complainants go to their lawyer and say, obtain the information you couldn't obtain through the Office of the Health Ombud. And then you can't deny them, because then they will apply to Paya or Popi or Papa, whatever you call it, and then you are forced to give them this piece of information. So the Office of the Ombud becomes almost like a license for people to sue each other. And what does that do? It increases the litigiousness of the society, which is why you have such a high demand for litigious cases. But then it's going to erode the trust of the Ombud with the public and the establishment, because the establishment says, well, we can't give you your information because when it leaves you, it goes into the legal fraternity. It no longer belongs to us. I mean, this is just lessons that we are learning for the few years that we've been here, but these are lessons that one can share with a body like yourself, because you've got to think at high level as to how you structure, as we move forward, you structure the bill such that you protect the office. In the UK, if you went to complain and told them that you want money, it doesn't go to the ombuds. You go through the court straight away. But here, you say you don't want money, so you come to the ombud, and then he gives you a report, and then you go and call a lawyer afterwards and say, now let's take them to the cleaners. And we're getting those kinds of complaints. And I think we just need to be very, very careful about it. As you know, this is Mental Health Month, so most of you will be reminded of life as demean. I just want to end my presentation as follows, that when I took this job, I was told that I'll be here for 7 years. And I asked myself, what is my strength coming to the job? And what do I want to achieve when I leave the position? And Let me share this with you. I wanted to be able to set up an office of a health ombud that would be the best anywhere in the world. That was really my aim, because that is my strength, setting up systems, basic systems. And that's why I took the trouble to try and understand the legislative framework, the capacity of the institution, and I did comparative analysis with other countries in order to understand what we're faced with as a challenge and in relation to the evolving the NHI. I did not think I would be the ombud. I thought I would be the person who creates this office, that the real ombud will come after me, will do the work of an ombud. But this person must find an office that is the best that could be anywhere. And that's why I'm raising these issues, that if we don't get the office set up on the correct footing, we're going to have many ombuds that are going to fail, and the country is going to fail as a result. So it really doesn't matter. As you'll often be told, I think the public protector became alive, I think, at the turn of the third public protector. But we forget that maybe the first two actually were the footworks that set up this whole system properly. And human development is like that. You know, when we were still out in the struggle there, we used to say we will never be like the rest of Africa because we have learned lessons. Now when you look at the state capture, you ask yourself, what lessons have we learned to steal better in a modern way? Anyway, I'll stop.
UK, Prof, in your analysis of UK and South Africa, the figures, the staffing, and you left this part, the alignment, which you are motivating. I then want to bring somebody from the Department of Health, because this matter has to be reconfigured. Now, we can't sit in the meetings like this and not hear our contribution as a committee if we are needed. How is it to be reconfigured, the separation of these two entities?
As we speak today, the presidency, I think they've started drawing up two bills, one for the OHSC and one for the Office of the Health Ombudsman. They're supposed to be submitting their first draft today to see how this thing can be reconfigured in line with what came out of the health summit of the president. So something is beginning to move, and we're beginning to make an input. But one of the things that I wanted to also to make it clear was that as much as one has noticed the problems or the issues, I did not want to participate in such a manner that I write a bill for Mahoba. It must be a bill for the country and for the office of the ombud. I want to withdraw, but tell them, these are the problems. Find mechanisms that are independent, that are ethical, to deal with the problems, not to bring one to be writing it. And then at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's very difficult to separate yourself and your public self sometimes. So but that's what's happening at the moment.
Department of Health.
Thank you, Chair. I can confirm that there is currently a draft health ombuds bill which seeks to establish the Office of the Health Ombuds as a separate entity from the Office of Health Standards Compliance. So there are current discussions between the Office of the Health Ombuds, the Department, as well as the Department of Planning in the Presidency. Thanks.
Timelines, that draft bill, where it is, when do you think it's going to be brought into some parliamentary processes?
Chair, unfortunately, I cannot confirm the timelines at this point in time, but I know we're still trying to finalize the socio-economic impact analysis with the Department of Planning and the Presidency. So as soon as that has been concluded, then it would follow, you know, the necessary process.
Okay. We'll request that Secretary, you would actually find space and time to write to whoever in the leadership of maybe the minister, just to give us a timeline, so that we now have gone past this as a fact. This principle is acceptable, that they will have to be separated as to what is the plan with the department, whoever is driving it, because a bill will have a sponsor to come to Parliament. We'll have to wait for that. Just to get that, not that we are going to push them. If they are still putting together this, that, and the other, that's fine. All we need is to be appraised as to that process has started. We think it will be in Parliament come February or whatever time. Then we work on at least a particular time frame that can deviate 1 month before or 1 month after. At least that time, that type of a situation is going to assist us. I think more so was what Prof is saying is the issues of what NHI, I mean, is going to be doing with regards to already what we are expecting from Office of the Standard Compliance together with the Ombuds. So please, the committee therefore will resolve to write to the minister to get an appraisal as to how we envisage this process is going to go. Thanks. We are not dismissed, Prof, as yet. We would then need to rechange and get the other presentation. Please, honourable members, just keep your comments if you wish. We'll combine them with the office. The most important thing was to get to see these offices.
The second bill that the presidency is busy with, just the name from the prop.
The name.
OHSC.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, the current the Office of Health Standards Compliance is currently established in terms of the Health Act. So the idea is to separate the OHSC so that it also has its own act as well as the Office of the Health Ombuds. So there will be two pieces of legislation.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Today, I don't know if we need to introduce ourselves. It's not necessary. It's not. Because we've been here before to come and introduce ourselves to the Honourables. So, Ntate Maphata, I must say that there is an apology from the CEO. She is held up in something. I'm sure you know how passionate she is about her job. She's held up really, really, there was no way she could get out of this appointment. And then the executive manager, CFO, Mr. Mapata, will take us through the report. And Winnie, will you take us through some parts of the report? Okay. Ntate Mapata will do everything. So that's our annual report 2018-2019. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Honorable Members. We will present the annual report of the OHSC as audited by the Auditor General, both performance and financial information. So the purpose of the report is to outline progress with regard to the 2018-19 annual performance plan and also the financial performance of the OHSC for the same year, as well as indicate some of the constraints which the OHSC faced during the course of the financial year. This is the mandate of the OHSC. It has already been indicated that there's an effort to separate the two entities, but currently the OHSC is established through the National Health Act, so hence this new move to have a separate legislation that establishes the OHSC, and the objects of the OHSC are stipulated in the Act as being monitoring and enforcing compliance by health establishments with norms and standards, as well as ensuring consideration, investigation, and disposal of complaints relating to non-compliance with the prescribed norms and standards. And the vision of the OHSC during the 2018-19 financial year was safe and quality health care for all South Africans. When we came here on the 4th of September, the Honorable Members asked us a question why we say all South Africans. We did indicate that we have now amended this vision. It now says safe and quality health care for all. But for purposes of this report, because this was still 2018-19, this is the vision that was still applicable. But for the new APPs that will be bringing to the committee, we have since amended both the vision and mission. In terms of the mandate, what it implies, I'm going to skip this. We have emphasized this even when we came on the 4th of September to present the APP. Now, we'll be reporting performance in terms of the four programs, which is Program 1, Administration, Program 2, Compliance, Inspectorate, Certification and Enforcement, Program 3, Complaints Management and Ombud, Program 4, Health Standard Design, Analysis and Support. And in this regard, the OHSC has adopted four strategic goals. One, which is publicly demonstrate responsiveness and accountability as an effective and efficient high performance organization. Two, being to inspect health establishments for compliance with quality norms and standards. Three, being patient in community complaints regarding poor care and situations of concern investigated and responded to. And four, being progressively improve the quality and safety of health care through effective communication and collaboration with users, providers, and other relevant stakeholders. All these strategic goals are aligned to the programs that I've just mentioned. Program one is administration, which comprises finance, supply chain, human resource management, information technology, communication, stakeholder relations, governance, and legal. And the purpose is to provide leadership and administrative support necessary for the OHSC to deliver on its mandate and comply with all relevant legislation. And in this program, we had indicators that we needed to deliver on. In 2018-19, the first indicator had to do with percentage of funded staff appointed. I must indicate that the emphasis here is funded staff. We have unfunded staff members, which we couldn't fill, obviously, but they targeted to do basically with funded staff. And in this financial year, we had 121 funded staff members. At the end of the financial year, we had a total of 117, which represented 97% of the funded against the target that we had of 90%. And the second indicator had to do with the certification of inspectors. The inspectors of the OHSC were qualified and trained, but with the promulgation of the new norms and standards in 2018, we had to take them through again to an updated training program. And the aim was to ensure that 85% of them are certified through this program. And at the end of the financial year, we had 0% because they completed the program just a month after the end of the financial year, which was April, and then the certification was then done. And in terms of audit outcomes, the OHSC achieved a clean audit from the Auditor General. I'm happy they are here also to confirm this one. And in terms of IT systems, we had a target of 95%. And we achieved a target of, an actual achievement was 99.98% of the target. And in terms of our stakeholder relations, we had a target of 8 to run stakeholder engagement sessions. And in this regard, with the promulgation of the new norms and standards, we did 19. Most of them were countrywide consultative sessions in all the provinces. And this pushed our actual achievement to a total of 19. And in terms of the MOUs, the Act requires that we can sign or enter into cooperative agreements with the relevant stakeholders for the purpose of pursuing the mandate of the OHSC. So we had a target of 4 cooperative agreements, and out of them we achieved 2. One which was with the South African Nursing Council, and the other one was with the Council for Medical Schemes. And so we could not achieve that target in terms of the cooperative agreements that needed to be signed. Just to indicate that during the course of the financial year, we concluded office space lease agreement, which we'll see in terms of the impact on our finances later. We had also had this training curriculum. We achieved a clean audit, countrywide consultative sessions, and we also have an anonymous fraud hotline in place. These are just the highlights, some of the highlights to indicate under the administrative program. In terms of the challenges, some of them have been highlighted by my colleague, Mr. Tholen, that the inadequacy of funding remained one of the major challenges facing the OHSC, because with the promulgation of the norms and standards, now we anticipate that the volume of work has increased in terms of inspections and complaints, and so there's a need for corresponding financial resources to keep pace with the volume of activities, and this also requires a fully developed information system to be able to keep pace with the pace of the activities as they increase. We are also looking at the feasibility of a generation of revenue from services rendered, because in the Act it is there that the OHSC may raise revenue by charging fees for services rendered. So we're working on that module, which we have taken to the state law advisors on a legal opinion. The second program has to do with inspection, certification, and enforcement. And in this regard, during the course of the year, we had a target of 725 health establishments to be inspected out of 3,816. So members will realize that this represents a 19% out of 3,816. And this total is basically public sector health establishments. Out of them, we were able to inspect 730, just over 0.13% of the total. There's a separate report for this. We usually come to the portfolio committee 3 times a year. One is to present the APP, secondly to present this annual report, and thirdly to come and present the inspection report, which is the outcome of these 730 health establishments. So it's a separate report, which is as big as the annual report as well. And the second indicator we had was to do the same inspections in the private sector. But due to the lack of promulgated norms and standards during the course of the financial year, we couldn't go into the private sector, because the regulations came into force in February of 2019, just a month before we closed the financial year. So we'll be starting the private sector in the new financial year. Members might recall when we presented the APP, we had indicated the target for the private sector. And the other indicator had to do with the development of certification procedures, which we have since completed. The issue of certification is very key also in the NHI, because the draft NHI bill requires that certification be done by the OHSC before accreditation can take place. So we have done that. And the second aspect had to do with enforcement procedures, which were published during the course of the financial year. The term of commenting was just beyond the financial year, and we are working on the comments that were received from the public, in general. And the other indicator had to do with a report of inspections. So the report was only completed after the financial year. For the purpose of the report, during the course of the financial year, the report was not completed. So we have since completed this, and once the portfolio committee invites us, we'll come and present the full report on inspection findings. And this is the coverage of inspections per province, 730. We'll realize that the Eastern Cape made the most in terms of inspections, 154, followed by KZN and Limpopo. And we also conducted healthcare risk management audits. This was as a result of the request from the portfolio committee, and we did a total of 252. And also the report of this will be presented when we come back. So the issues to note under the inspection program is that we inspected most of the health establishments were in the public sector. We couldn't do them in the private sector due to the regulations coming in force during the latter part of the financial year. And so we are, and then that certification could also not happen during the course of that year, because we were using the national core standards to do the inspections, and now we'll be using the regulated norms and standards for that purpose. And the challenge is that there's a limited number of inspectors to conduct inspections due to funding constraints, because the inspectors have to physically do the inspections in all the provinces, so that demands quite a lot of resources. And on average, we did some calculations. On average, for a week, an inspection for 5 days cost about 114,000 rands, just for 1 week. And we couldn't do the private sector, which I've already mentioned. In terms of the complaints management program, some of the aspects here were covered by my colleague, that in terms of the complaints resolved in the call center within 2 months of lodgement, we had a target of 50, and the ones that were resolved amounted to 77.84%, just above the target. But in terms of the investigations, this has also been highlighted by Prof. Mahoba, that we completed 2.53% of the investigations that needed to be done due to capacity constraints. And the other one is the issue of a percentage of investigations finalized by Ombud. Ombud has already spoken about the Tower Psychiatric Hospital investigation, which has been completed. The Act requires that the recommendations of the Ombud be monitored by the CEO. So all of the recommendations that were made by the Ombud were closely monitored by the CEO, and this has also been audited by the AG and confirmed as such. So highlights to note in this program is that we do have a fully functional call center for receiving complaints. There's been an increase in the number of complaints received, but there's limited capacity to fully dispose of all complaints due to the high vacancy rate as a result of unfunded posts, which my colleague has already alluded to. And this slide indicates the number of complaints which were received per province. We will realize that compared to 2017-18, there's been about 800 extra complaints that were received, with the most being in Gauteng province. followed by the Western Cape, then KZN, Eastern Cape, and also the other provinces. So there's been an increase, but the capacity has remained the same. In terms of those that were resolved by number of complaints by resolution status, out of the 1,904, so the 1,599 are the cases that were then closed. And complaints that were received per category of health establishments, most of them had to do with the public sector, 1,332, followed by the private sector complaints, making up a total of 1,904. And we have different mechanisms through which complaints are lodged. The most popular was email, followed by telephone. We do have those that walk in into the offices. And then number of complaints received per domain. The domains, as indicated on the graphs there, are listed on page 59 of the annual report. They just couldn't fit here in terms of their description. But PR refers to patient rights. PSCG and PC is patient safety, clinical governance, and patient care. The ones that are out of scope are the ones that are not in line with the mandate of the OHSC. So the list goes on. But so we can see that most of the complaints related to the patient rights. The last program was the program of health standards design analysis and support. And in this program, we had a number of indicators. One of them was the percentage of annual returns analyzed within 60 days. And the target was 80. We achieved 100. So we exceeded the target on that one. The reason for this indicator is because the Act requires that health establishments have to submit annual returns to the OHSC by a specified date, and that date is by the 31st of March of each financial year. And the next indicator had to do with the number of norms and standards recommended to the minister. During the course of the year, we recommended one standard that had to do with emergency medical services against a target of one, so that target was achieved. And also the next target had to do with number of relevant authorities responsible for supporting health establishments that received guidance for compliance with norms and standards. We had a target of 12. We achieved 15. I've already alluded to the fact that we ran countrywide consultative sessions and engagements in all the provinces with regard to the new promulgated norms and standards. The next indicator is to do with the system for data collection and surveillance as part of the early warning system. This indicator was achieved. And the last one had to do with the health establishments identified as RS referred to the relevant or appropriate division or unit within the OHSC. All of them, about 80, they were all referred for inspections, which were all done. And highlights to note in this program are that the draft norms and standards for emergency medical services were developed, submitted to the minister, and we also continued with the development of regulator inspection tools, consultative workshops that have indicated, and that one of the challenges here is limited expertise in the development of standards as a result of funding inadequacies. This slide, I will not go into the details, but it's annual return submissions by provinces. We had anticipated the yellowish line is the actual that we received, and the blue line is what we had anticipated. So we'll see that the one that submitted the most as anticipated was Mpumalanga, although the base was a bit smaller than other provinces. Gauteng submitted 60%, submitted Free State 97%, together with Gauteng. So Eastern Cape was 60%. And then if we were to summarize the performance, we had a total of 21 performance indicators for the year, out of which 71% were achieved, 5% were partially achieved, and 24% were not achieved. And turning over to financial information, this slide indicates that in total, when compared to the prior year, the OHSC's revenue declined by 4%. We received 3% extra from the government grant, but when we look at the bottom part of the table, expenses increased by 23%. So there's that disjuncture between the growth in revenue and the growth in expenditure. And we explain some of the main expenditure items at the bottom. So from the National Treasury, we received 3% extra compared to the prior year. And the outcomes here, we have indicated we have received a clean audit from the Auditor General and 3% increase in allocation from the National Treasury. We raised some interest through short-term investments with the bankers that made up about 1.5 million. And in terms of the expenditure, we've seen an increase in self-complement and salaries, which includes interns and temporary staff members. We had almost 20 temporary staff members, including the environmental health practitioners, on 12-month contracts. And we've also seen an increase in board fees, which are regulated by the National Treasury. We've seen an increase in asset base of the OHSC, and we've also seen an increase in the volume of activities. And one of those activities was the move to the new offices, which pushed our cost base significantly because we had to set up new infrastructure like ICT, and the space is 5,000 square meters compared to 1,000 square meters that we occupied at the MRC building. And we have incurred a deficit, and most of the contributors were the ones that I've highlighted, but there was no reason for panic from ourselves because we had a surplus with the National Treasury had approved that we could retain, and so that surplus assisted us in funding some of the activities. So although the deficit is reflected there, on the balance sheet we're still quite healthy. And expenditure per division, the division that had the biggest expenditure was compliance inspectorate with 61 million, a 27% increase on the prior year, and followed by corporate services for the 3 million. Most of that has to do with support services like rental of offices and all ICT infrastructure and assets of the OHSC. So the inspectorate remained the biggest contributor to our expenditure for the reasons that I did highlight. And in terms of percentage share of expenditure per division, the inspectorate comprised 42% of total expenditure incurred during the course of the year. And when we look at focus areas, support functions versus core functions, core functions made up 60% of total expenditure, with support functions making up 40% of total expenditure. This graph represents the same as the one that I've just indicated, but it compares it to the prior year. So I will skip this one. In terms of compensation expenditure, we can see that the inspectorate is still the biggest. 45 million of that was in the inspectorate, followed by the complaints management and ombuds office at night, then followed by 15 million as the second. And in terms of share of compensation expenditure per division, the inspectorate in terms of cost was 50%, followed by complaints at 17%, corporate services at 15%. When we split it in terms of focus areas, the core functions made up 76% of compensation expenditure and support functions 24%. And these are compensation costs by employee level. We will realize that the middle level staff, professionally qualified and skilled technical, make up about 66% of total expenditure. The majority of those are inspectors. And in terms of staff complement, share of staff complement, Field Inspectorate has 51% of the share, followed by Corporate Services at 18%, Complaints Management and Ombud at 15%. And then in terms of the split, focus area, core functions, 75% of the staff, and support functions made up 25% of the staff. This graph is the same one that I've just explained earlier. And that was the last slide, and those are the acknowledgements. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, thank you very much for the presentation. It's very clear on the slide. Sorry for the members who might not have seen it earlier than this time. I now open this space for honorable members to make their comments, contributions with regards to the presentation, both presentations combined. Okay, let me now take the hands. I see Honorable Van Staden will be number one. Number two, Honorable Jacobs. Number three, Honorable Janti. Number four, Honorable Sengwa. Five, Honorable Chirwa. Six, Honorable Ikmao. Seven, Honorable Sokati. Thank you, all members in that order, starting from Honorable Van Staden, you go right round.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on the OHSC. If you can just indicate to me what is the number of inspectors you have currently in each province, please. Then, on to the Ombudsman. Now, my vision is for this entity is that it needs more teeth in legislation to do its work to fill the gaps we see currently. We saw in the life issue that you make the recommendations, you see to it that it's been implemented, but that's it. So what I mean is that you need to be connected with entities like the Special Investigation Unit, the National Prosecuting Authority, and so forth, and so forth. So at the end of the day, you must only be to your recommendations at the end of the day must actually be enforced. That's what I mean by this. So I think you understand what I'm saying. The resources is lacking, it's a big problem. That's something which needs urgently attention, and we hope that this new bill will sort this matter also out. While workload you have in your office is only two people to do this, it's terrible. That's why we can't solve cases, because eventually it will pile up and you will be overworked and underpaid, if you can say that, at the end of the day. That's a problem. We need to address that problem as a committee. And when people out there seek help in this sector, and we need to help, and that can only be done by strengthening the health ombudsman's hands. But we must also be careful that people don't see the health ombudsman as a money-making business, like you said, Prof, or a scheme for the public. But only to do its investigations and to enforce the law as prescribed. That's how I would, at the end of the day, would like to see the Ombudsman functioning, and I hope that we can strengthen your arms and hands at the end of the day. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Let me start also with the OHSC. If you were to summarize now, I see a lot of work being done and different forms of work being done by the OHSC, if I could put it like that, different categories of work being done. And also understanding when this started, the thinking was started in 2011, 2012, and started getting momentum from there onwards. So if you were to summarize, what would you say had been the impact of on quality of care experienced by the receiver of service at the point of care? Because that actually is what the OHSC is all about. Having all of these norms and standards and mechanisms to lodge complaints, etc., etc., the next question would be, what would facilities, when you now find a facility not complying, you obviously issue whatever you issue, a guidance, or you issue some or other certificate or some other non-compliance certificate. How do you make certain that they do comply in the end? And number two, what recourse do you have if they do not? And remember the emphasis here being on the quality of service that a patient must experience at any facility which they visit. My second point relates to the Office of the Ombud, and we hear very carefully what is being said, and we also heard this before, and yes, we want to strengthen the hand of the Ombud as the portfolio committee. So we're very happy to hear that there is a bill on the way, and also that the bill is aligned with a new bill of the OHSC. So from my perspective, Prof, we want to say that it's a good job being done, and congratulations on the job of the Life SC Dimeni project. It's really put our country out into the world as a success story. So in terms of your funding, yes, we need to look at that. I'm sure that will be in the new bill. In terms of your individual offers that would not be related to the OHSC, I think we understand that fully. And then also in terms, one that we're missing is your accounting line, which was raised, and hopefully that is also put into the bill to make your life easier. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's also welcome the presentation from both presenters. When we first met the professor, the Ombud, I think nothing has changed from the presentation that he gave. And I'm only hoping that the DOH will work faster into getting these pieces of legislation, because it is not fair to have an office. Well, by the way, I benefited from his grilling a tower. So I know what type of work they are doing. So it is really important that we get the Office of the Ombud empowered with human resources. The OHSC, they've written in their presentation staff complement, but I don't see any organogram of that, of the OHSC there, to understand the funding, because it's more money goes to personnel. And I don't see in the staff complement they are a reform. Appointment by gender, by race, disability, there's nothing like that in this. Yesterday, we had a presentation from the presidency, monitoring and evaluation. They are presenting to us that they do inspections as well. And now my question to you is, what? Probably I should just ask, what impact have you seen? Because they were reporting here that they went inspected what you had put as ideal clinics and said they qualified. They went inspected. They found a lot at regret. Now, my question is, what is the impact of your inspections to these different facilities they were talking to us? And I would have been interested to know the board members of the OHSC as well, so as to see. Well, we're interested in equity because I've seen some boards where 15 members, 12 are males. It would have been nice to know the composition of the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. In Ombud, I don't have a question, but in my mind, I'm looking at the overwork while they have two offices or two people to work in the office. I am very much looking at this work, good work, but there is an impact of shortage of the staff. In OHSC, first of all, may I have a clarity of issuing the certificate between NSI or OHSC? What certificate are you issuing in what? That's why I said I want a clarity on that. Three, my sister here is talking about the inspector, and I've said we want the visibility of these inspectors in hospital and clinics, because our clinics, our hospital there in the rural areas are more or less dilapidated, and even the staff are shortage, and some of them are just lazy. I heard you talk about the quality. We want quality in our hospital. We want quality in our clinics. Therefore, we want inspectors' visibility in these structures. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just a few clarity-seeking questions. I just want like a brief, not brief, but like a more detailed overview on the number of cases that have been lodged per year and what the backlog is, because it's not really clear. And what happens to the previous year's backlogs? Or do we just dismiss them as though that has not been done anymore, both in the OHSC and the Health Ombud? And also, I want to know, how is the conflict then resolved between the Ombud and the OHSC, since there is some kind of overlapping personnel sharing and all of that? How do you then resolve internal conflict situations? I don't know if that is clear, Mama. I'm just seeing like a weird look. Yeah. If there have been cases of conflict between the two. and the enforcing methods of resolutions or recommendations, rather. What are the systems of enforcing the recommendations, and how successful have they been over the years? And when they are not successful, what do they revert to in absence of success? And on page 50, I'm seeing the compensation increase information there, and I want to know what influences the percentage, what is the rationale behind the increases, and if you break it down further, because I don't know if it's like I'm referring to just the CEO salary or the entire office and how that looks like. If you can break it down even further, that would be great, because I want to know. And oh yeah, if can a certificate of compliance be revoked before the 4 years ends? And is there a system to monitor, like even after the certificate has been granted, what is there a monitoring system in between, or are we not capacitated enough? And how does that affect accountability after the certificate has been granted? I just want to know what that means. How that manifests in reality, that, you know, before you come, they're like, ooh, fix quickly. Those 3 months, you come, you give certificate, and back to square one. If there are other, like, offices, besides the two that you mentioned, if there's, like, I don't know, like, mobile offices or people that from other provinces where people can interact with it directly, I'm asking this because I feel like the fact that Gauteng has the most complaints is a room for concern, you know, because I think then there's other issues at play, like for instance with KZN and Limpopo being the two provinces that are most impacted with poverty, how that then affects the fact that they can't complain, or I think this issue is about access to the entities for different groups, marginalized groups to be quite specific. And also, do we have, like, stats on who reports as well? Because I think then that can also give us, like, an understanding of what the root problem is, like, on race and gender and the two when they intersect, on sexuality, on class. Because then if we just use a blanket approach, because I think it will be very hard to create preventative measures on responding to the issues that people face. And what is the referral system for complaints that are affected or relate a little bit to the entities but are not within the jurisdiction of the entities? Are people just told, oh, no, you are referring to the wrong people, go talk to the Department of Labor? You know, like, for example, if there's a relationship, like, I want to, the clarity between the private sector and the public sector, and what you do, if there is, what is the jurisdiction of the entities in the private sector, and who monitors the private sector as well, if you guys don't have complete jurisdiction. Like, for instance, if I know of a case of a young girl whose mother passed on, who was working for a private practitioner, né, for like 15 years, and then only to find that there's never been a contract, there's never been, like, and now the doctor has gone MIA, and there's no, how do then people then report such instances? And then does it also fall under jurisdiction? And if it doesn't, what is the how do you revert to other systems? If there is a system to revert to other systems that you guys can't necessarily partake into. And yeah, that is it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On OHSC, I just want to get clarification. You have submitted norms and standards to address certain health issues. How soon are these, your submissions, addressed or included or implemented thus far? I mean, you're doing your job, and how is it that you're getting the assistance from where you're supposed to? 2 years after your investigations, etc., what remedial actions have already been done or have taken place where you can show us that, you know, besides the life as it may, you know, when you're looking at other hospitals and so forth, what can you show as the remedial action that has been taking place? I think it's clarifying with a few other speakers that spoke. If you consider our AG report that we received yesterday, I mean, they've shown us dilapidation of facilities, dirty facilities, non-compliance of filing and archiving of medical reports. How are you ensuring that these health facilities are really doing what is necessary. A real matter of concern to me is the lack of critical resources. How does one expect this institution that is so important to ensure quality health care if not, you know, the office is not properly running? Another issue that I would like to know is the ratio of inspections as compared to the amount of health facilities, because that doesn't really tell us, your report doesn't really tell us the qualitativity of your work. You're just telling us a small quantity, but you're not really comparing it. We're not getting the broader picture. I'm really concerned about the shortage of staff component because we have a major issue with our health facilities, and the healthcare is the core. And by you not having an empowered office, we're really lacking in service delivery on the ground. I note your call center unit is running, and you give us a good report, but all call centers have dropped calls. I mean, most call centers are well known for calls that are being dropped, and we're not getting a report on those. I just need clarity. Maybe it's a stupid matter of clarity, but is the OHSC or the Ombudsman information, contact details, and so forth clearly visible to all patients at each and every health facility, each and every public health care facility like a clinic, a hospital, and so forth? Because we have issues where residents or patients have issues, but really it's like they talk to deaf ears. So if it's clearly visible, it's easy for them to just get in touch with you. Maybe your numbers are also showing less. Not that I want to take away any of the good work that you're doing, but maybe you would have much more. Yesterday, the Office of the Presidency came in, and they actually stipulated that in some cases they notify the hospital that they're coming in. And you have the health staff that one section, you have the health staff that know exactly what's going on. They know the amount of beds, they know this issue, they know that issue. And then they go to another very hospital and they give them 10 days or so before they go to a site visit. And the person in charge knows nothing. I mean, that comes from their report that we received yesterday. So clearly we have an issue. And how is the OHSC and Ombudsman really dealing and attending to this? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentations. I just have one question or point of clarity from Professor Mahova. I think as a committee we need to agree that the health ambulance, the office that needs to be strengthened in terms of both the budget and the staff, it is clear you can't move in a situation of this nature. And we also need to agree, Prof, that there are so many mismanagement of patients and violation of their rights throughout the country. And maybe you mentioned the issue, the case of the Northern Cape. I was once MEC there. I know at some stage I was called by the judge where mental patients were kept in jail. Now, I just want to check, Prof, when does your office come in? Should there be a request or should there be an incident before your office come in and investigate? Thank you very much.
To complete the picture, thank you very much. Let me just add my also clarity-seeking questions. We are going to request the Department of Health to come back on a specific day that we still have to decide. Just on two programs that are worrying us, this is a resolution of the committee. One is with regards to the oncology programs in the country. The other program is mental health in the country. We would wish to give this information to the Department of Health. It might be important to invite or have Professor Mahova joining you on that day, because this is provoked by, among other things, a city many, and therefore, but there's generally an awareness, and we have to comment here, Prof, to assist us, that there's an increasing mental health challenges in the world, and therefore we are part of the world, and unfortunately, this is just one program that has not been attended to.
not just by South Africa, but by many leaders in the world. And therefore, before it is too late, maybe we need to start. I was just commenting yesterday that, yes, we are doing relatively well right now on HIV, but we started a bit late. We should have started much earlier, and maybe could have saved the millions and billions that we have now spent if you start attending to any program early when it is just starting, then to start when it is too late. So I would wish to want you to be invited, but maybe to comment, Professor Makhoba, whether our concerns you share with them, that there is an explosion of mental health problems in the world. Now, in the presentation of the OSSC report, you need to clarify me here, because you are saying you are bringing a report again, you are tying up things of the visits to clinics and hospitals. I'm aware of the report that you produced last year, and that report brought some discomfort to the department. Rightfully so, because you had pitched your level of reporting to an exceptionally high level. You were actually saying, after so many sites that you inspected, only about 6 or 7 are qualifying. And you were like, if I were to use the language of sitting for exams, you were looking at the distinctions only. You were looking at the people who passed with distinctions. And those who were barely managing 54% progress, maybe you need to help us. Why did you look into the distinctions only as a reason for you to say, we can only accredit you clinic number A because we have a clean record, all the things that you asked for you produced except one. But if there was a clinic that was found wanting, maybe on 4 or 5 things, you marked it as out of this picture. The last one was yesterday there was a presentation by the Auditor General, and they commended you for always remaining with a clean audit. In fact, in their own words, they said, Office of the Health Standards Compliance has maintained a clean audit outcome since 2017 due to effective controls that are in place. So they commended you. We are happy to receive that. But I've just been trying to look into my notes as they were reporting yesterday. But they did pick up that there were 70 out of so many other facilities, health facilities that you inspected that regressed, that showed regression. But Office of the AG was not able to tell, of course, rightfully so, it's not their duty to say what were the reasons for regression. But then could educate some of us, including the Department of Health. If you could actually be able to share with us what were the reasons for the regression in those 70 facilities, both night means you must go back again instead of going forward and inspect. And probably you could share with us again, it's like true. So it means if you pass an exam this day, not guaranteed that you just can sit back and not study and hope to pass the very same exam next year. So you will fail. So that is probably a message that you want to send to the clinics out there to say, what has made you to pass this standard? You must keep to it all the time, because otherwise it doesn't help. Because when you come back next year, having reported that you are visiting, you will fail the same exam that we gave you last year if you don't notice this thing. Thank you very much. If you could then assist us to understand this.
Thank you, Chair. Normally, we are given about 15 minutes to see who is going to answer what. Is it okay with the Chair?
We can give you much more, because
yes.
We are taking some resolution here to say Office of the Health and Compliance, Office of the Ombud, you are together. We can give you more. We agree here that this committee, that those must be looked into separate health this year. So we'll give you more. We'll
yes.
be generous.
Thank you.
Answer
truthfully and generously.
Thank you. Thank you.
You
want to take a break now? We are not having a break. I start, Prof.
Let me try and deal with the questions that are. There are very few for me. The first one is, it's about mental health in the world. I think I have spoken to this committee about it. I do believe that we are sitting on a time bomb, and we are in a state of denial, but we don't want to recognize that. And here are the light, the bright lights. We have a terrible gender-based violence in the country. Is that not a mental health problem? We have crime, one of the worst crimes in the country. Is that not a mental health issue? We have so many children being abused. Is that not a mental health issue? We've got so many incidents of racism. Is that not a mental health issue? I mean, how come after 25 years of trying to deal with racism, it's going up rather than going down? I mean, there must be some mind that... So there are, the signs are all there that we are having a mental health problem. And as I mentioned before, when we were dealing with AIDS, as the chair has said, we started late. But what did we do? We created SANAC. And I have spoken to the previous Minister of Health that my recommendation was that they should have a structure like SANAC for mental health in the country. Because in the UK, the previous Prime Minister took that as her mantra. She was going to deal with mental health. In Canada, the Prime Minister in Canada took it as his mantra. He was going to deal with mental health. In Europe, I think about 15 countries or so have reviewed and have seen a rise in incidences of mental health. So I think the signs, the telltale signs are there. It's how we deal with it. So I tend to agree with that. I would support that. The issue of incidents or complaints, I think my office is supposed to respond to complaints. But my office can also see something that impacts on the health system that I must initiate myself. So, you know, like some few incidents that you read in the newspaper and you realize this has got enormous impact on the health system, and you don't have to wait for somebody to come and complain. You just have to, you know, to deal with that. So that is allowed at the moment, I think, in the current National Health Act. In terms of whether people know how to get hold of me, I think I have to confess we are not good at that, because we are still trying to organize the system of how our offices are going to be, I suppose, are going to discharge their responsibility. Are we going to have provincial kind of offices? Are we going to have every establishment and then we draw up a protocol as to how you go through a system, you go through maybe the establishment and then you go through the MEC and then you come through the central ombuds? We haven't sorted that out. So I suspect that if you went to the hospital at home, they wouldn't know my number. But when I arrive there, they know, because they know me from as a small child in the village or something like that. So we're not good at that. We haven't reached that. But there's no doubt that I think the call center and everything, I think they've been well advertised, and I think people who want to know, they do that. You know, one of the things I remember, I laughed at, was when Kulula, whatever it is, came into being. It was supposed to be the cheapest, Kulula. But in order to get into Kulula, you had to have a computer because you had to go through kulula.com. Now, it was supposed to be cheap for the poor, but how many people who have got .coms who are poor? So, you know, sometimes you create these things, and they are sort of out of balance, but nevertheless, they are a marketing gimmick, but actually it doesn't serve the people that you want to serve. The ones that have .coms is like myself, yourselves. The ones that you need to sell don't have computers. So it's just one of those things. But I agree with the honorable member that we are not yet there. In terms of recommendations and enforcement, let me assure this committee, our recommendations are being enforced. And I'll give you an example. About life as many, and I can also do it for Tava. All the recommendations that were made at life as many, first of all, they were handled by the CEO. She gets regular reports from the various places where we have made this recommendation. She follows that up, and she addresses that. That's the first. The second is that after the report was released, the SAPS were involved. The SIU were involved. The NPA has been involved. So all the law enforcement officers or offices have been touched by the report. Either I had to go and be interviewed quietly with them so that they can follow up. Forensic pathology was involved. So the process of following them up, of enforcing them, is really something that is being well done. The Human Rights Commission was asked to investigate the status of mental health in the country from those recommendations. They have done that. There is a report that has been produced, and it shows precisely that those provinces that do not have a mental health directorate are the least that are performing in terms of mental health. The report is there. It was produced. It came out of that kind of a recommendation. So there is a lot of those things that are being followed up. In terms of the impact, I try to emphasize this. You know, I happen to, in one of my hobbies, I work in the National Planning Commission. And one of the things that I laugh at is how we created 1,151 indicators in the NPC. And we have only delivered 2 in 7 years. 2 out of 1,151. Now, if you are a mathematician, you can work it out how long it will take to deliver those 1,000. It's generations. So maybe we should call this a generations project rather than something that we think we can solve. But you know, we're scared of such things because the truth does hurt. It's going to take us a long time because implementation is not the same thing as ideas like we're sharing here. And as a country, every time we face a problem, we appoint a new commission. You know where that happens? At universities. You have a senate, you have a problem, they set up a subcommittee. When that subcommittee finishes, it says another subcommittee. And that's how universities survive over the centuries. Nothing gets done in action. But they produce beautiful documents. They are all recorded and for posterity. Hardly anybody reads them sometimes. So I think we have to strike a balance about this sort of thing. But impact is going to be what makes the difference. Most of us in South Africa are very busy people, but our impact is very low as a country from many aspects. And I think we have got to try and change that in order to change the country. I think those are the questions. We don't have any conflicts that require any solutions between myself and my colleague. We work very well together, so I think I have to emphasize that.
Thank you, Prof. I would just like to say to the chair and the honourable that Ntate Maphata will answer any finance questions. Advocate is the one responsible for certification. Advocate Makwede. Any norms and standards would be done by Mrs. Moleko, and the inspection questions will go to Mrs. Moncho. But I would like to say, in terms of general complaints about hospitals, the state of hospitals, we are responsible, we are accountable, me and you here, to make sure that the people down there who are trying their best with very limited resources can reach the objective of patient, safe patient care. The appointment of people that are in charge should be the caliber that know what they are doing, should be the caliber that have got passion about what they are doing. We will go there and there, and then next time somebody is moved, then somebody new is coming in, but that person has no clue about what they are supposed to do. That we owe it to our nation that appointments at higher levels should be done correctly, Chairperson. That is very important. We owe it to the people. It's not about us. It's not about anybody. It's about the citizens of this country. Ntate Maphata.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question around the composition of the board. Currently, the board has got 8 members, and in terms of gender balance, is 50-50. And also, the presentation was as a summary of the full annual report, I think, which was also distributed to the members. Now, the details in terms of gender balance, race, etc., for staff members are also covered in the full annual report. We just didn't project them because we were trying to just do a summary of the annual report. But the details are there in the annual report. But we can go through them if the members feel later that maybe we should deal with them. And there was a question on the issue of mobile offices. Currently, the OHSC operates from a central place. I think Prof has alluded to that. We are based in Pretoria, but there's also a consideration whether we can decentralize to provinces. But one of the critical issues is resources for doing that. So in the absence of resources, decentralizing will be a bit of a challenge, but this is something that we are also looking at, to make the office more accessible in across all the provinces. And there was a question around increase in salaries. It's largely driven by two factors. One is the annual salary increases that we do. The OHSC uses the same salary scales as DPSA. So we effectively have adopted the DPSA salary scales and levels, so we use the same. So on an annual basis, whatever DPSA implements in terms of salary increases is what the OHSC also implements. But we have also had a number of temporary staff members to alleviate the staff shortages, and these were funded largely from the surplus that the National Treasury allowed us to retain. We had about 8 interns, 13 environmental health practitioners, and also 8 temporary workers. So that made just close to 30 in terms of temporary, in addition to the 117 that we had. So that's why we see the increase in the number of, in the cost of salaries. I think from here, I'll allow my colleague Advocate Makwedi to deal with the issues surrounding certification.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. There was a question on what is the certificate that the OHSC will be issuing. In terms of the Act, one of our functions is to inspect and certify health establishments as compliant with the prescribed norms and standards. So the certificate that we will be issuing as the OHSC is called the Certificate of Compliance. And that Certificate of Compliance is linked to the NHI. When you look at the NHI bill, it does provide that for a health establishment to participate or be accredited to participate in the NHI fund, it first has to be inspected and certified by the OHSC. So that is the link that has been created by the NHI bill between the certificate of compliance to be issued by the OHSC and the accreditation by the NHI fund. The other question relating to a certificate of compliance that we'll be issuing as the OHSC was whether the certificate can be revoked prior to the expiry period of 4 years. Yes, this certificate can be revoked, and it is one of the enforcement powers that we have as the OHSC to revoke a certificate of compliance issued, and that revocation is linked to recommendation to the minister to close either the whole or part of a health establishment. So if as the OHSC we inspect and certify a facility, then 12 months down the line we identify that there are breaches to the norms and standards, then we can revoke the certificate of compliance that we have issued. And then there was an additional question to say, how do we then follow up on the compliance status or monitor the compliance status of a health establishment? In terms of our processes and functions, we have what we call annual returns that health establishments will be submitting on an annual basis. We also have self-assessments that health establishments will be conducting on an annual basis. So they will be reporting to the OHSC on an annual basis. And then we also have developed an early warning system and have identified indicators that health establishments should be reporting on. Some are on a monthly basis, some are 24-hourly, and then some will be 72-hourly. So we will be monitoring those indicators as and when health establishments are submitting. So if we see that there is a red light in terms of the indicators that are submitted, then we can go and inspect and satisfy ourselves as to whether the facility or the health establishment is still of a suitable standard or whether it can still remain as certified. And the other thing or the other mechanism that we will be using to monitor compliance is the complaints. So as and when complaints are lodged with the call center, we will look at those health establishments that have been certified just to satisfy ourselves that they are still providing a service of good quality or a prescribed minimum standard. And then there was a question relating to jurisdiction of the OHSC in private and public health establishments. So in terms of the Act, the OHSC mandate extends to health establishments, and health establishments has been defined in the National Health Act. So it includes both the private and public health establishments, even organizations or establishments for designed not-for-profit. So as the OHSC, each and every facility that renders health services, we do have a mandate to monitor compliance with the norms and standards. So because our processes are progressive and then we are doing things in a phased-in approach, some of the norms and standards for other categories of types of facilities have not been developed yet. But as and when norms and standards are developed for the different types of health establishments, our mandate is going to extend to all those health establishments. And then there was a concern raised by the chairperson in relation to interpretation of the inspection results. I just want to indicate that we have what we call a compliance status framework within the OHSC, which guides compliance levels of each and every health establishment. So we have categorized facilities. Some will be at excellent, some will be at good, some will be at satisfactory, and we have set the level of compliance as the OHSC. So it doesn't mean that if a facility is at performing at 70%, then it's completely non-compliant. It will be regarded as compliant, but with specific conditions attached to the certificate that we will be issuing as the OHSC or the report. So previously, it was a matter of interpretation of the OHSC's results, but we are trying our level best to clarify that so that the public can also understand what we mean when we say a health establishment is compliant and will be issued with a certificate of compliance. So we have those categories. We're not only going to say only the A's are compliant. We do indicate that there is an A, there is a B, and there is a D, and then these are the conditions that B and C should comply with. So we have developed that process, and we are communicating it to stakeholders, and we will continue to do that. And then there was a question on the recourse that we have as the OHSC in case of non-compliance. So the act that establishes the OHSC gives us powers to enforce compliance. So where there is persistent non-compliance, we will then enforce compliance as the OHSC. One of the enforcement powers that we have, I've already indicated that it's revoking the certificate of compliance, and we can also issue a warning to the person in charge of a health establishment. One of the members indicated that when the presidency presented, they raised issues of one person in charge not knowing what is happening in their facility, whereas the counterpart knows. So in our case, the legislation, because we are a creator of statute, it does give us recourse to say, if a person in charge fails to do what they're supposed to do in terms of the act, then as the OHSC, you can then issue a warning to that person in charge and can also recommend that disciplinary processes be instituted by the employer. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and the members of the Portfolio Committee. I will be responding to three questions. The first one is on the number of inspectors that are in the office. Currently, we have 45 funded positions, and 44 are filled, and all that 44 is trained and certified as inspectors of the office according to the Act. And then the other question that I'll be responding to, I will respond to both of them at the same time. The other one is speaking about the visibility of the inspectors in the rural areas, and the other one is speaking to the ratio of inspections. I will answer both of them at the same time. The offers do go to all provinces, and we inspect in all rural and urban areas. With the given resources that we have currently, in 2018-19, we were able to do 19% cutting across all provinces and all districts in the country. So according to the Act, we are supposed to inspect, in fact, all health establishments, both private and public, within the period of 4 years. So we cannot choose where we go to and where we don't go to. So we are quite visible. So if we are given the resources, to be able to increase our coverage in 4 years, we will have touched all health establishments in the country. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Health Portfolio Committee. I am going to be addressing the issue of impact. I will start by saying, as the Office of Health Standard Compliance, we exist to ensure quality and safety in healthcare. And the inspection is a means to an end. And in terms of the office, like Prof has said, we have not yet been able to measure the impact. But based on the number of complaints that we are receiving, and that is just a tip of the iceberg. If people were to complain about our health services, then we would be able to see that we have not yet managed to, you know, really make an impact. And also in terms of the media reports. And one of the things that we have been indicating was the issue of resources. In the National Health Act, there are a number of functions that the office must, you know, do. We are inspecting. We have not yet certified. We have managed to submit the norms and standards to the minister for consideration. We have not yet managed to recommend any quality interventions to the Minister of Health. And we have not yet implemented any warning systems. And when you go back to the Lancet Commission report, it recommends that the office must implement early warning systems in all the health establishments. If we are going to be focusing on only inspections, we are not going to be able to improve the quality of care. The reason being that the office is not going to be able to inspect all the health establishments. And if we are going to continue inspecting but not responding to the findings of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, we are not going to be able to improve the quality of care. So we need to make sure that the findings of the Office of Health Standards Compliance are also responded to. And the Chair also spoke about sustainability. When it comes to sustainability of the very same standards, we need to make sure that quality becomes a culture in the health establishment. And we need to make sure that we also follow up on our findings, but because of limited resources, we cannot do that. And I must also indicate that the other question was related to ideal clinic framework, to say the presidency, they went to the health establishment, and in terms of the very same ideal, they realized that, you know, there were lots of concerns. We have tried to work closely with ideal clinic framework, but at the same time, the National Department of Health will be also addressing that, to say, as the office, we are supposed to focus on quality assurance, but at the same time, we need to make sure that also there is improvement in our health establishment. An ideal clinic framework was initially established to do exactly that. So we need to make sure that at the end, we always communicate the findings, but the findings must also be, you know, acted upon. And the other issue that I also want to, you know, mention is the issue of numbers that Prof indicated, you know, to say we need to focus on the depth, the impact, not only the number of inspections. And I will stop there.
Thank you to Ntate Maphata, Advocate Mme Moleko and Mme Montsho. I don't know if we have answered your questions, all your questions. If there's any question that has not been answered, you are free to remind us.
Sorry, sorry. I would like to just add something to the last question to answer something about impact and why we only concentrate on the distinctions. The reason for that is that there's been a long-term development which has been happening. We started off in the early inspections where the information system was only able to give us an overview of facilities because of the way that the information system was being developed. We realized that this was a problem, and what we have done is we've now increased our inspection process where we also look at functional areas within healthcare facilities so that instead of just giving an overview, we can now go in and we can look at any facility and up to this point, we haven't been able to get our results on the internet so that facilities can, through the internet, access their results. We are very close to having that capacity, and it was mentioned that we do need more funding for this, and this is something that is, I believe, is critical. The idea that and the process that we're working towards is that every facility will be able to access their data through the internet. Obviously, there'll be priorities and privileges, so not anybody will be able to do it. There will have to be appropriate controls. But the whole quality improvement process will be improved because one of the difficulties we've had in the past is that we were able to give really detailed quality improvement plans out there. But because people were unable to rapidly respond and use the internet and the type of information interfaces which allowed the person in, say, a facility to communicate directly instead of having to go through with a paper trail through the internet, and the office could then get back and see what was actually happening in real time. And quality improvement as a process was impaired. It couldn't happen. The idea is that, for example, the National Department of Health and each province will have access to this data. It is the responsibilities of the provinces, the local authorities, and the private sector to, in fact, do their own quality improvement programs. And the idea is that there will be an interface with the province, with the Office of Health Standards Compliance, and with all role players that will enable, for example, a province to see that there's a problem, say, in surgical areas. By virtue of going into functional areas and being able within the functional areas to go into the surgical processes which are monitored, the indicators there, we'll be able to see where are common problems. And so quality improvement as a process will be vastly improved. And this is going to provide the kind of possibility to be able to not only go in and look at the exceptional ones, the distinctions, but to be able to go in to see the laggers and the ones who actually don't have the skills and be able to provide appropriate training and uplifting. So that is the plan which we're going towards. But for that, we will need additional funding, although we are already very close to it. The funding will be required to enable all the hospitals and clinics in the country to have access to this database. Thank you.
Prof. Stellenberg, before questions come from the House, Prof. Stellenberg will also...
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, the Honourable Chair and members. I would like to start with primary health care, because we have touched on resources. And as we sit here today, we have a major responsibility, all of us, to make sure that the support is given from primary health care level. They are understaffed, they are bombed with so many numbers that our operational managers are not managing and leading the clinics because they're involved with patient, direct patient care, and not really looking at patients. It's like a factory. Patients are moving through rapidly. They are totally understaffed. So while we have everything up there trying to implement and do things, we need to get to operational level and to give the support. And I'm going to touch also on the South African Nursing Council. I'm not sure if you know that next year we will not have any training of specialists in this country. There's only one university that took up the challenge of looking at a second intake for this year because all legacy qualifications come to an end at the end of this year. So there's no training because regulations have not been signed. Regulations have not been put through yet. That is going to put us in big trouble, not only for next year, but possibly also the year after 2021. It's going to be a backlog. We're going to have big problems. And this is going to impact on NHI. If we are not going to continue with our training, we need support from you because this impacts on the quality of patient care. I'm going to give you one example of how sad the situation is in our midwifery departments, is that we've just completed some study, and out of 149 cases that were admitted to the midwifery department, and this is, we looked at trial bundles, 143 went to the labor ward, of which 135 were cerebral palsy. Not because it's the mistake of the midwife, but she's bombed with so many cases of mothers having to give birth. So there we need some investigation and support because midwifery is definitely in crisis. There's obstetricians that don't want to do obstetrics anymore because of this. And we're standing with our eyes closed at the real problems with the country, and this is what Minister Motsoaledi still said in March, of 90 billion litigation. Where does it come from? If we are not giving support at the operational level, we will continue to perpetuate the problems we have in our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Chairperson, is it? Can we hand over to the honourables in the House if any questions have not been clarified?
Normally do that, they would indicate to me if they have not been clarified. I can't take a second round. We have closed the meeting. Unless there's one indication to me, no, we don't take a second round. Answer that.
Can I suggest we don't take a second round? But Chair,
we don't do it yet.
Okay.
I give you members ample time to ask as much as they can. They ask 6, 7, 8 questions. Can't go again and start another round. You've given ample time after listening, so it would have been a first of its kind if I give you a second round. So we have come to the end of our session now. There are some members in the back who answered very well, and we are seeing some of them for the first time. I thought you, Chair, were going to indicate those two ladies next to each other. I don't know. Have you ever been here before?
Yes, but I can...
No, here.
Chair, this is Mrs. Moncho. She is in charge of inspectorate. That's Mrs. Winnie Muleko. She is in charge of HASDAS. Health systems.
Health standards, design, analysis, and support.
And we have Advocate Makwedi, who is in charge of certification and compliance. And then enforcement. And we have, And then at the back, were you here, Advocate Makwedi? Were you here in the past? She's a board member. Yes, Prof. And
you want to address me? All right.
Now, Chairperson, the information that we get have giving us now in this committee. This is very crucial information. And I would like to propose that we send this information with very fast speed to the minister's office so that matter can be addressed. Because otherwise, this is what I was also saying many years coming now. Otherwise, we're going to sit with a huge crisis, and I support the advocate. So please, can we make this an urgent issue to be resolved? Thank you, Chair.
There's been a lot of professors there and advocates. Which one are you referring to in particular? Which one? The last information. Okay, yeah. No, look, we are compiling a report based on all this presentation. Sometimes I just do highlights of the thing, but we are compiling a report that is going to serve to us, and I'm really pleading with you members that I'm going to really be affecting you next week, Friday, because we have many other reports coming in next week. Now, the office needs to pause a bit on a Thursday to compile a report that we must adopt on a Friday. So please make sure you clear up your Friday next week. You can't leave before lunchtime. Doesn't matter, the chair may not be here because of other programs. Okay. Thank you very much, Prof. And we hope that, as Dr. Janji has said, there's nothing new that has changed. Office of the External Compliance and Ombuds. We hope that the process that you are going to inform by health will show us timelines as to how this process is changing. But please continue doing the good job in terms of the Auditor General. Though the Prof said Auditor General is like, what? People want to be a court. We are like a banker. But in defense of Auditor General, you write a story and say to Auditor General, I shall perform this way. And they audit you on what you read, you have done. So if you don't want to pitch it up, don't hire your targets, because they pin you down on the things that you have said you will do. And when you fall short of those things, they say you didn't comply. That's how they pick on your compliance. Okay, thank you very much. Travel safely. Thanks for your being so kind to us. Honorable members, sit down a bit. Honorable Jacobs, don't go too far.